on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, looking back at the life of Dr. Stan Lindquist. I spoke to him in my early days of interviewing veterans, and many of you have not heard his story. With his passing, I couldn't miss the opportunity to share a little bit of his legacy with you. We're going to pick up the interview now with a focus on his personal experiences in Europe during World War II. Tell me some of the things you saw early on, because you were an Army medic. You're on the front lines. You're tending to guys who've been shot, who've been blown up, guys who have been killed in combat, some who are almost dead. How did you handle that? Tell us some of the things that you saw and what got you through it from day to day, because I can't imagine how difficult that must have been.
Well, there are so many times that things have happened that have created problems that were problems too. But after a while, you get a little bit used to that. You never get really used to it, but at least it doesn't hit you the same way as it did the first time. And I remember one time when I was out, I was always an early bird, and I always got up before most of the other soldiers did for some reason, and I guess I'm just my farm home living started me that way. I guess that's all the only reason I can expect it or express it. Anyway, and I was walking around, and I saw a lot of slit trenches, trenches that were flat. They weren't very deep, but they were long, so we could lie down in them, and then you piled dirt in front of you so that hopefully if the shots were coming, they'd go over you. And in this one slit trench was a soldier, and he was absolutely still, and I didn't know whether he was awake or what, and so I shook his shoulder and discovered that he was dead. And all he had on his wound was a little nick in his steel helmet, where a piece of shrapnel had come from above and penetrated his brain and killed him immediately. And his buddies had to move on for their job, obviously, and they left him there. The grave detail hadn't showed up yet. But that really struck me real hard, because here we were doing things that we were told that would save us, protect us, and here he had done everything right, but it didn't work out. And so I began to see, you know, how does this work in with God's plan for our life? And I think that it began to reinforce my feelings that, well, I'm either going to get it or I'm not. And I might as well just go ahead and do the best I can and try what I could. And this really became important for me at one time when we were bombed by our own planes. And they hit our ammunition bump. The reason was that we were so far ahead of the where the battle lines were supposed to be. I guess the pilot must have thought we were German troops. I don't know how he could get us mixed up with that, but because our vehicles were different. Or maybe he was just unloading his bombs because he didn't want to go back with them on. And at any rate, he bombed us on the hill, and it happened to be our ammunition dump. And it just created hell on earth. And I was told, hey, go in there and see if there are any guys living and see if you can't pull them out. And I don't know, the shots were coming from every direction. It's much worse than if they're aimed, because you don't know where they're going. And then the big shells would blast every once in a while, and powder kegs would burn, and all. It was just a horrible mess. Well, anyway, we picked our way through it, and we got burned a little bit. I had asked one of the fellows there to take the other end of the stretcher in case we found somebody. And I remember one fellow especially, the first one I came to, I thought, well, I'm going to get him on this stretcher and then we can get out quick. That'd be a way to get through with this. But I took hold of his hand and the flesh, I mean his arm, and the flesh just pulled up. He was just totally cooked. It was just really a shocking thing. But we went through, and there were a lot of men sitting in their trucks. It was the ammunition trucks. They looked as if they were alive, but they were all dead. They were all absolutely burned up, or smoke inhalation had killed them or something. And finally, we had a chance then to turn around, and we threw the stretcher down and took off. And the way we couldn't go back the way we came, because it was all burning we couldn't get through. So we finally found a way and got behind some rocks where we protected a little bit, and we managed to get out. And I really felt that somehow God was with me and us, that we were able to get through that and be able to do it in the first place, because that was a scary situation to get into.
You know, I talk to so many veterans who say that those kind of images stick with them. Is that something that you've tried to get out of your head and can't? Or have you found a way to compartmentalize or deal with it?
I have written about this, so that in fact, one of the appendices in the book is this particular story. I think that helps a lot. But also the fact that you know, if you feel that God is with you and he has protected you, that gives you some sort of reassurance that goes beyond. And every time you remember it, it just, you hopefully say, well, thank goodness for that, or thank God for that. Only one time was I really had a bad case of reintegration, it's sometimes called. We were living in Chicago. I was going to the university there, the University of Chicago, and we decided to sleep out on a kind of a sleeping porch. It was windows all the way around, but it was up high. And there was a very severe storm, as they happened in Chicago. And I woke up thinking I was back on the battlefield, and I practically ran out of the place. And I realized that, no, I'm not there. This is a safe place for me to be. And my wife was sleeping alongside me, and my son was in his crib right next to us. And they were all okay. And so I said, well, to myself, I said, it's okay.
Yeah, like you said, thank the Lord for that. And speaking of things you're thankful for, surviving. I want to ask you about an experience that I guess you could say was the critical point of your service during the war and really set the course for the rest of your life in a roundabout way. Certainly not the way that you planned it. There's a saying I hear from a lot of veterans, whether they're Army, Navy, Marines, you name it. They say, never volunteer for anything. And you made that mistake, didn't you?
Sure did. And that's what ended my war experience, that particular incident. It wasn't nearly as scary as the incident I just described. It was just a plain field with the cows were grazing on the field, and it looked like it was a perfectly quiet place. But in the middle of the field were a couple of GIs, and they were blown up. This was a minefield. And the whole thing was mined because it was a gap in the Hurtgen Forest, and they wanted to stop the equipment from going through there, so it was mined. Well, I don't know why we did this, really, but I think we felt that we should go ahead and try to save those kids that were there.
Especially as a medic, that was one of your duties, to tend to the wounded. And here they are wounded in the middle of a minefield, a clearing in Germany's Hurtgen Forest. And you and your friend, another young medic, you volunteer to go into the minefield, get these injured soldiers, and bring them back.
Right. Well, anyway, we stood there, and I really wondered, you know, this seems kind of a stupid thing to do. And I really was, my knees were pretty shaky. But somehow it seemed to me that, as I remembered a verse from the scriptures, that giving your life for another person is a great thing to do.
Greater love hath no man.
Right.
Lay down his life for his friend.
Right, exactly the thing. And that seemed to give me some strength. We decided then that we would go. The fellow with me was just a young man. He just got out of college, so he was quite a bit younger than I. I was an old man. I'd graduated from college for some time. I'd worked for a couple of years at teaching school. But we went on out, and we were able to find a way by looking where the ground had been disturbed. We could tell where they'd hidden the mines, the anti-personnel mines. That was the ones that are hard. The big mines, we could avoid them because we could step on them and it wouldn't make any difference anyway. But then we got out about 100 yards or maybe more. Suddenly, we couldn't find a way, and so we came together. Normally, we always stayed at least 20 feet apart so that if one got blown up, then the other one could help out. Well, in this case, we were trying to decide what to do, and so we figured it out, and I said, I think we could go right this way. And the young man, McGee, Herschel McGee, his name was, afterwards he said he moved his foot a quarter of an inch or a half an inch or whatever. Anyway, a short distance, he blew up a mine. And that set off three different mines. One directly under him, which blew off part of his foot. Another one a little further away was the one that shattered my feet and my ankles and leg. And the one that he set off blew up into my face. So it had locked one of my eyes, hit out one of the eyes, and I was picking shrapnel out of my face for years afterwards, it seemed like. But anyway, we both got blown up into the air. In just a second, our service time was over. So then from that on, I had to spend about 9 months in the hospital. I couldn't walk or anything.
And you couldn't see. You lost your right eye, and you couldn't see out of your left eye either. For how long?
Oh, about 3-4 weeks, as I remember it. You know, it might sometimes things are a little foggy, but as I remember it, that's about how long it was.
What was the first thing you remember after the mines blew up? What was the next moment of consciousness for you?
Well, the next time was when we were going to the hospital in the ambulance, which was really an old truck that had been fixed up with some beds in it. Stretchers was amounted to.
Did you know what had happened to you, or did they have to explain it to you?
I knew that something had happened bad, and I knew that I couldn't walk because I couldn't move my legs. I think I could move them a little bit, but I couldn't stand on them. And when Hirsch had called for a tourniquet, I was able to find a tourniquet or belt out of my aid kit and threw it to him. So I was awake to that extent, and I also knew that it was going to be awful painful, although it wasn't then. So I got out a shot for deadening the pain, and I jabbed it in my leg and squeezed it, and it wouldn't go out, and then finally it just broke and dribbled all over my hand because I'd forgotten to puncture it to begin with.
And you're doing all of this blind.
Yeah, without seeing anything. And anyway, I was trying my best to do something, and then I passed out, I guess, because I don't remember much at all from there on until we got in an ambulance, and that was a horrible experience. It was a rough riding thing. I tell you, they didn't have very good springs on those things.
Yikes. I'm sure you at home are imagining yourself in his position, wounded, blinded, and completely unsure of the future. But there was quite a future in store for Dr. Stan Lindquist, and we'll get to that and the remarkable legacy he has left us when Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch right after this.